Good morning, Fairbanks. You're listening to KFAR Radio. We're at 97.5 on the FM dial. We still come in at 660 on the AM dial. But we also live stream at KFARradio.com. This is Problem Corner. I'm your host, David Pruse. Today is a recorded segment, so we will not be taking phone calls. Sorry about that. This was recorded earlier. I have in the studio with me here Nancy Marks. She's one of the co-founders of the Opioid Project. Then I have Marcia Oss. She is with the reentry program through the city of Fairbanks. Nancy, how you doing?
Great. Thank you for having me.
Marcia, how you doing?
I'm okay. Fair to middling.
Let's get better. Come on now.
Okay. I'm fair to middling. I'm good. I'm just rocking the free world.
Okay. There we go.
Okay.
There we go. So Nancy came up from?
Boston, Massachusetts.
For?
I was invited by Marcia to lead some workshops on the Opioid Project, which its full name is the Opioid Project, Changing Perceptions Through Art and Storytelling.
Wow, okay.
Yeah.
And
she is the pre-symposium that we were talking about. She's one half of the pre-symposium activity we were talking about.
We did the symposium last Wednesday or Friday, and they brought up the pre-symposium, and you're the whole pre-symposium. And when's the symposium?
15th through the 18th.
And the pre-symposium is?
The 15th from 9 to 5.
And who's the headliner?
Nancy Marks and Dr. Annie Brewster.
That's fantastic. Now, Nancy, before we go into the pre-symposium and the project itself, what brought you this direction?
Yes, thank you. Well, Annie and I met, we started our project in 2015. I was doing art. I'm an artist in Boston with a background in public health and expertise in public health and art. And Annie is an internist at MGH, which is a very prominent institution in Boston. And she is the founder of the Health Story Collaborative, which combines storytelling and medicine. And Annie and I met because we shared somebody who was surviving ovarian cancer. And I was working with her doing art, and Annie was helping to audio capture her story and her experience.
Seemed like 2014, 2015, especially in Fairbanks, is when the opioid epidemic exploded. So you started right when it was exploding up here. Did you see that explosion in Boston?
Yes, and I sort of come to the table around opioid use through, I have an adopted daughter whose mother died of substance use and HIV in 1998, so I had helped her come to understand what it was like to live with the loss connected to substance use disorder, and Annie, as a doctor, was seeing it explode in Boston, so both of us were coming from it through personal angles, but through our own, walking our own journeys.
Okay.
That's kind of interesting because at that time here in Alaska, between 97 and 99, we saw a big explosion of HIV/AIDS. And at that time, I was working for Tanana Chiefs for the Community Health Services. And so we were doing a lot of HIV education and a lot of training on the mutations. That's when it was starting to mutate, and they were looking at different medications. So it happened about the same time where they were looking at the opioids and the IV drug use and HIV.
Goodness gracious.
Speedway now.
Yeah. So tell us about the pre-symposium.
Well, I'm with a group called LION, the Learning Inside Out Network, with Dr. Stanley, and she had attended a writer's workshop, and she was telling us about this incredible person that she had met, Nancy Marks, and she
said, who's
in the studio with us right now.
Who came over from Boston.
And when anybody drops anything in my lap, I run with it.
Who ended up at your house this morning at what, 4 a.m.?
No, she got here yesterday.
Showed up at your house.
Yeah, she showed up at my house, and I put her up in a room and got her dark out curtains so she could sleep.
Nothing but the best.
Yeah, and so we contacted her and Dr. Brewster and said, hey, we want to do a symposium on opioids and the impact that it's having. And they had the Opioid Project, and Sarah had sent it to us, and Brenda McFarlane of Crisis Now and Bryn Butler from the Housing Coordinator at the City Hall, they really liked the idea too. So we all jumped on board to call them and see if we could get something here going.
Okay. And what is on the pre-symposium, what is the schedule or the agenda of the event?
So it'll be broken in two small sessions. There'll be a morning session from 9 to 12. Then we'll have lunch. And then from 1:30, I think we're giving Nancy and Annie a break till 1:30 to 4:30. Then they'll come together with another small group. And during that period of time, they'll create art with Nancy, and Annie will collect their stories. And then they'll put together an art installation for us. It'll go on a website. I think it'll go on their website. And then it'll be able to stay here in Fairbanks, and anybody that wants to use it when they're going out and talking about opioids or Project Hope or the Fentanyl Response Project can use the storyboards that we've created.
So, Nancy, do describe what you create.
Sure. Thank you. So Annie and I created these workshops based on our sort of skill sets.
Mm-hmm.
Me as a Boston-based artist, and Annie as an both a doctor but also an audio storytelling expert who started an organization called the Health Story Collaborative, which helps patients tell the story of their disease and their journeys. So Annie has that skill set. Yes?
I like how you said disease. Yes.
Thank you. So as we came together, we sort of thought, what are our goals here? We started out with pretty small goals. We wanted to just get 10 people into a room that could use art to express loss. We started out with family members who had lost somebody to overdose. Our first workshop was 12 people. We put it on a website. We have an organization called Learn to Cope, which is for families living through the loss of a loved one through overdose. And we put that on Facebook on a Friday night at, I think, at 10 p.m. And by 10 a.m. the next day, we had 24 people interested in attending the workshop. So we knew we had touched on something.
You tapped into something very...
And I think what we tapped into at that point in that sort of that smaller goal of giving people support to express their loss was the isolation and the stigma that comes with losing somebody to overdose. And so we started the project just based on healing people, giving space for healing and support. And then we started realizing we had something here, and the idea of really, we didn't want to be talking to ourselves. We wanted to work with the community partners so that they could use the stories and the audio that comes with it. So the way it happens is we set up four-hour workshops,
mm-hmm.
then we bring in 10 to 12 people based on our community partners' needs. So in this case, Marsha and her group are helping to select the people they want. So it's either people who have survived overdose, people who are living with various degrees of recovery now, people who have lost somebody to overdose, first responders who are in the community. They will come in, we do an opening circle, and then they make art collages. They bring in poems and photographs, and we've had people, some woman, her son was a chef, and so she brought all the spices they brought to put into their artwork. Annie then takes them out one at a time for 10 minutes, and she captures their stories, and then after the workshop is over, Annie takes those stories and reduces it down to 2 or 3 minutes, so it's bite size.
Okay. Fairbanks, we're going to take a commercial break here. You're listening to KFAR Radio. Again, this is a tape recording. We're not taking phone calls, and we'll be back after these messages. Fairbanks, welcome back. I have in the studio with me Marsha Oss, and we have Nancy. Oh, what's in a name? Nancy Marks. You know, you seem to be changing it on me every time I see you.
It's O's.
O's. And, well, Nancy Marks is easier for me. Miss O's. And so your first session is Monday, the 15th, the pre-festival or
symposium.
Pre-symposium. And what time does your first session start at?
At 9 o'clock. Marsha's been taking sign-ups for it because we can't just have, you know, we have to be controlled on how many people show up. So Marsha and her group have been collecting people who are interested in participating. And and then making decisions where what time slot is best for them.
It is a very descriptive healing event, I would say.
It starts out as very healing. I mean, yeah. We often have people, they step, especially parents, they step in the door and they immediately start crying because it's the first time that they can reconnect with the loss of their loved one in a safe space with mm-hmm. other people going through that. But we had, after we started this, we realized that we had something that was bigger for us, which was that we wanted to partner with communities who know best what they need and what the messaging they need around the epidemic in their community. So, for example, if we work in Gloucester, Massachusetts, which is a big fishing community, the people that they bring in are fishermen who go out on boats and are out there for long periods of time in the water, and that's the community they want. Whereas if we go to a different community in Boston, we have people who are being exposed to opioid use in different ways.
Where are you from originally?
I grew up in New York City.
Say water.
Water.
Yeah, my mom was from the Boston area. You've got a little bit of that regional dialect now. Water.
She was making fun of me saying washer earlier.
I was making fun of you. Well,
what's in a dialect?
I know. Same as a name.
So, you know, you've come from basically about the farthest you can come across the United States.
Yeah, it's awesome.
How often do you do this a year? Leave your home
well,
to do this?
We do 2 to 3 session workshops a year. Mm-hmm. Sometimes now we've been asked to come in. We've started doing lectures at med schools to talk about they're not exposed to what it means, the first person account. There is so much stigma and misunderstanding about substance use disorder mm-hmm. and who is, you know, there's so much victim blaming and that there isn't a pocket that can't benefit from listening to people's stories. And when you start looking at med schools and, you know, they don't have time to actually hear first person accounts. So we yeah. actually now have, we're now not just doing workshops, but we're taking our open portal onto the road and sharing stories and then leading discussion about people's assumptions.
You know, I always say it doesn't matter who you are, what your age is, what part of society you're from. You might have been good all your life, but there's always that demon that's going to come after you, be it alcohol, marijuana, cocaine, heroin, opioids, whatever it is. There's always a demon stalking you.
Well, sir, some, you know, if you start listening to the stories we have, you know, there are plenty of people who, you know, they had an injury and they needed a painkiller
yeah.
and they weren't actually looking to escape anything. They weren't running from anything. They became addicted because they were prescribed too many opioids and they followed the prescription and now, you know, here we sit. So I try not to, I mean, I think that there are plenty of people that are trying to outrun demons, and I think that's true. There's
yeah.
a lot of pain in society, but I think what we are trying to show is the humanity behind any individual, no matter how they came to the table with substance use or how their family has been exposed to it or how a first responder, there is pain, is pain, is pain, and, you know, the human qualities of compassion and love have to be the first way we meet people.
Yeah.
And that's how my dad died in 2005,
mm-hmm.
was from fentanyl overdose. And he was a veteran. He was Air Force, Army Air Corps, and then Air Force. And he had 4 different doctors at a VA in Nevada, and they all prescribed him different opioids. Nobody ever read his chart. And they all came in the mail, and one was fentanyl strips, one was pills, he was getting Dilaudid, he was getting Percocet, all of them, right? And then one day he collapsed and we got him to the hospital and they were trying to figure out what was going on and there was 4 doctors in the room and I said, do you read his chart? Because every one of you are prescribing him an opioid at a different dose and he's mm-hmm. trying to follow your instructions and you're killing him.
Oh,
and that's how my father died, was from fentanyl patch overdose. Yeah.
When I was about 14, 15 years old, I was playing basketball, and I got shin splints. So yeah, they gave me basically a a barbiturate for a week to take, and while it healed. And I remember when I was done with it, I couldn't fall asleep for about 3 days, so about 3, 4 a.m. That's basically what I said, was scared straight. You know, I like my sleep. You know, I'm a freshman in high school. I don't want to get up in the morning. Here, this. So I've always never, ever gone for pills. I have a seasonal allergy, hay fever. And I fight it tooth, fang, and claw until I go take something over the counter before I start addressing it.
And I'm really proud of what the VA is doing now with being able to recognize that, you know, they needed to reevaluate how they were medicating. They had to have better talks with teams. And they've come leaps and bounds. And it was so nice when the head of the VA guy, I can't remember his name, that was just at the city hall, but he came and I thanked him, you know, for saving my husband's life, because they did the same thing with my husband. They were prescribing him lots of opioids. And, you know, they were thought they were doing a quality of care, but it was too much.
About 4 years ago, I had surgery at the hospital here. And it was a daytime procedure, but they gave me 3 painkillers for a week. And one of them was an opioid. And I took none of them. I took none of them. And then I disposed them at the police station. They have this little pull-out drawer you put them in. And I said, nope, I'm going to, you know.
But, you know, it's super complicated because what's happening now, I'm connected at Tufts University in Boston, and, you know, when I talk to the folks in the pain clinic, they're also freaked out because there's an undertreatment of pain now. There's the reaction to the other way, and so obviously everybody needs to be mindful of the drugs they're being given, but also we don't want people to be suffering needlessly because we now have swung to this other kind of reactionary place that all pain medication is bad.
You see a lot of people suffering, and then what happens is they go to the street because they're not getting prescribed.
It was interesting when I saw my doctor who was doing the procedure. I looked at her and said, look, I don't do pills. I don't do drugs. And I said, how soon after the surgery can I start having scotch on the rocks? And she looked at me and she laughed. She goes, as soon as you want. I said, okay. I never did that, but, you know, just is there something else I can take? I didn't know how much pain I'd be in, but I was just avoiding the pills, And so I've been fortunate about that. But goodness. So are you here for the entire symposium or just for the pre-symposium?
So our work with Marcia and the team here started before. We talked a lot about how we would work, and I sent lots of art materials out through the mail to get here in time, and we will be here through the symposium and then hop on a 1 a.m. flight back out.
You're here for a week.
Yeah, max. Annie's only going to be here for 3 days. You know, I wanted
to... You're taking one for the team.
That's okay. I'm happy to be in Alaska. But one thing I wanted to say that that I think makes the Opioid Project stand out from other education or advocacy tools is that we have been trying to be mindful that people learn in different ways. So when Fairbanks gets this Opioid Project back in a box, they're going to have 12 pieces of art that are 18 by 18 that have been made by first responders, people who survived overdose, people who have lost people. And with each piece of art will be some written language beneath it about what the imagery in the art means, and then you'll have a QR code, and you'll be able to swipe the QR code and listen to the in the person's voice, the edited interviews that Annie will have. So you'll be looking at the art, listening to that first person describe their path and what's important for them to note. And for us, part of what was important was to think a lot of people learn different ways. So some people are going to be drawn in, see the art, and they're going to be looking at the art, and then they're going to listen sort of secondarily to the story. Other people are going to be interested in the narrative storytelling of that person's path, and then they're going to turn and really look at the art. And so the idea is that it will appeal to people in different ways at different ages, and because it'll be on our open portal, they'll be able to take it into prisons, into high schools, into museums, wherever you want to use it, in City Hall.
It's a travel package.
It's a travel package, right.
Goodness gracious.
Yeah.
Did you know that coming into this?
I did my research, and I knew we were going to get a really good deal when we got them up here. I knew we were going to be really bringing something to the community that we haven't had.
How long in advance of the symposium did it take you to reach out and sort of get them confirmed or get them going on this project?
But has it been 60 days?
Yeah, February. Actually, it's pretty funny. So Marcia reaches out, and we get on Zoom, and Bryn is there, and I say, she says, well, we're thinking May, and I'm thinking, oh, May 2024. And I said,
no.
She's like, oh, no, we're talking 2 months from now. I was like, oh, my God.
Yeah, and everybody came together. Yeah. Sarah, Margarita, Jessica, Mike, you, everybody came together to make it happen, and I'm just really grateful that you did that for the symposium and for the community of Fairbanks to have something that breaks the stigma, breaks down the silos, and communicates healing.
Fairbanks, we're going to take a break here. We're going to give you some bumper music. I have no idea what it is, but it's usually pretty bad, so you just got to weather through it. We're going to have some Fox News, state news, some commercials, and weather. Then we'll be back. Fairbanks, welcome back. I have Marcia Oss.
You're getting the stink eye from my husband.
Oh, you know, okay. And Nancy Marks in the studio with me. And, you know, when I start making a mistake, it just keeps compounding, Marcia. So don't let your husband hear this at
okay,
all.
Okay, I won't. But
okay.
Everybody in Idaho and Utah, all my family, they've all listened to the show. I've sent them the link to the show now, and so all my family's a fan. So,
okay.
And Texas.
There you go. So you set this up 60 days in advance, and she was able to do it.
Yeah.
But this isn't just what she does. She has another life.
Yeah. Me and or her?
She has another life.
Oh, yeah. She has
but
another
life. But I'm looking at you to...
I have one, too.
Yeah.
Well, you know, you get into, you get around Marcia, and you just kind of, honestly, you just give it up. I already felt that the first day. I called Annie. I said, oh, man, I think we're going to Alaska. Clear your schedule. Annie can only come for 3 days.
You hit it right on the head. You just give it up. I mean, these three ladies back in the back corner of the office.
The unholy trinity.
All of a sudden, what will happen is, all of a sudden, she'll walk into my office.
Yeah.
I go, what am I giving up? What are we doing? And when they're putting this all together, they'd send in the closer. You know, the different personalities,
that.
But they'd send in the closer, Marcia, here.
I mean, I think one thing that's pretty amazing is that I think that, and I'm grateful, you know, I know that there's finally some reparations money coming down from the big pharma settlements into communities.
Yeah.
And we're hoping not so much... for just our own project, but there'll be now some funding to really think deeper about what it takes to really unpack stigma connected with substance abuse and also all the other cofactors of poverty and, you know, there's mental health. Mm. There's so much kind of caught into that we kind of call substance use disorder, and it's just flattens people out instead of really seeing that there's like many layers that go into this problem. And our hope is... we, as the money comes down, that communities will be able to have some room to do some creative programming.
Yeah, and one of the things about Fairbanks is, and I've been here for a long time, so I've watched it ebb and flow with treatment, and there's some really good quality treatment here. The problem that we have a lot of times is there's Medicaid or there's insurance or, you know, things like that. But there's always a group of folks that fall through the cracks. They always fall through the cracks. And one of the things, I got goosebumps just thinking about this because our borough is trying to get people to sign on and let them be able to access this funding as well, mm-hmm. to be able to give to treatment providers in the community to help with opioids. And I hope that everybody votes yes and lets them have the power to distribute, because it would help those folks that fall through the cracks that otherwise we're going to lose in an overdose. And so I just pray that that goes well, because I think what we're doing as a city with the funds that we got is what exactly is supposed to be happening with the funds.
Yeah, it's, and sort of put it in perspective for you, Fairbanks Mr. Borough, they don't have the power to distribute the funds of this that's coming in. So they'd have to put in their general fund and spend it on general fund items. So what they're trying to do is have the power to do what we're doing.
Yeah, give it to the treatment providers.
Directly to the treatment providers. And they're having an election. We have our municipal elections every first Tuesday, every October. So they're putting it on the ballot. I'm sure everyone's going to vote yes for it. I hope they do.
I do, too.
Yeah.
Because we were able to actually help Interior AIDS Association with funds from this grant to help people that, like, okay, transportation in Alaska in winter is like really hard, and then we had COVID, so there's like one bus. So we were able to give them funds from this grant to be able to buy people taxi fares, bus tokens, things like that, so they could get in and not miss their treatment, not miss their medical assisted treatment, and continue and not have to start all over at ground zero, because that's really, it just deflates a person and makes them want to give up. And I really want to see the borough be able to do what we've done. And
yeah, down at the city, we're not siphoning off anything for overhead or administration. No, it's 100% put back in. And it's what, $18,000 a year for how many years?
15.
Yeah. So, you know, this is, so you are the opening act. You're number one.
I'll try to do you proud.
You're the OG. You're the OG.
All right. You're the cleanup batter.
I'm the closer.
Closer, yes.
My work is done.
Yeah, if only.
Oh,
yeah.
Right. If only. Yeah. How many times do you go out on the road and do this a year?
So we are invited. We probably get three or four different communities reaching out to us. Pre-Big Pharma settlements, usually people will reach out to us, and then they probably take about 6 or 8 months to write a grant to bring us in. And then during that time, while we're waiting for the money, we work with them to figure out, you know, what are their goals. Beyond healing the individuals that participate, and then beyond creating an opioid project art show in a box, is also then the next step, which is what are the kind of advocacy changes mm-hmm. you want to bring about. So when Marcia's mentioning this idea of transportation so that people can get to treatment, you know, we'll be talking about that, because then it might work backwards, and Marcia wants to make sure that she gets somebody who's way out in the rural for us to get that story, so that then when people go and look at the art, they're getting an advocacy-rich story that they can then bring to a city council. We have had the Opioid Project go into city council meetings and into other kind of town meeting settings. They've invited us in to tell a story, you know, put up a story and show the art. And then they've used somebody from the community to talk about, well, this is what it looks like in our community, and this is why we're asking for more treatment beds, or this is why we're asking for more funding for, you know, for school, you know,
education.
School education, right, thank you. So we have the capacity, Annie and I have the capacity to do three of these workshops a year, because it really takes us about 4 months to, from beginning to end, to be a partner. Because we see ourselves as, although we create the raw materials for now Fairbanks to tell their own story, we love the communities we partner with, and they become part of our broader, you know, kind of family, for lack of a better word, in terms of really endeavoring to change in what seemingly intractable system in front of us around substance use.
Well, what's really kind of interesting is, like, with Fairbanks, with Alaska, and then with New York and Boston, there's a lot of history with settlement here, with folks coming out. Like, we have boroughs. We don't have counties. I think New York has boroughs, right? Does Massachusetts have boroughs?
Yeah, the seven boroughs of New York City.
Yeah.
Five boroughs. Five.
Yeah. So
I was an integer. I was good.
So we have an integer. So we have we have some things in common, and we have people in common that have been here for a really long time that are in this community specifically that I'm aware of that came from Boston and
my mom came from Otter River, Massachusetts, right outside of Boston.
Yeah.
So Dad came from L.A.
Same latitude.
They met in Fairbanks. Go figure. What the heck?
Well, also, what we'll do is when we put up the what we also do is once people go through the workshop, we will make prints for the folks who made the art. So what'll happen is the art will be owned by the coalition, but people who came and participated will receive after a print of the art that they made, so they can have that for themselves while they kind of put their story on loan towards a greater good of combating stigma. And so it will become also, we will make some copies and frame them for our traveling show that Annie and I put up when we're asked to. So we'll be representing Alaska.
Fairbanks, we're going to take a commercial break. You're listening to KFAR Radio. Again, this is a pre-recorded show, so we're not taking phone calls. So if you have called, it's probably not why we're not answering, because this is pre-recorded. I have Nancy Marks and Marsha Oss with the pre-symposium of going to be going on in Fairbanks the 15th through the 19th of May.
18th.
18th of May. We'll be back up to these messages.
That's awesome.
Fairbanks, welcome back. I'm Marsha Oss and Nancy Marks in the studio with me here. We're enjoying ourselves. Nancy came up from Boston, Massachusetts via New York to come to Fairbanks to do the pre-symposium that's going on at the Wedgwood Resort, put on by
the City of Fairbanks
through
the Reentry Coalition
and
the Crisis Now Coalition
and
the Homeless and Housing Coalition
on behalf of
the mayor,
City of Fairbanks.
The City of Fairbanks.
What's in a name?
Okay.
The City of Fairbanks.
I'm not really good with hand cues.
Actually, I was trying to throw her off by me.
Now you're going to make people already think I got problems.
Paybacks are hell. Paybacks are hell.
People already think I got problems.
Well, you're in a problem corner.
Well, that's true. Well, here I am. Yeah. If you have questions, call me.
But, Marsha, what you and Bryn and Brenda have put together in such a limited amount of time, you know, sitting here talking with Nancy in regards to how much time is usually needed. And you forget the integer, you went fraction. You did it in probably...
People are dying.
Yeah, mm-hmm. You probably put this on in 1/5 of the time that's usually done, so congratulations.
Thank you. I just can't see anymore. I have lost 7 family members to this epidemic and multiple clients. And I'm tired of watching people fall.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so there's no time. The time is now and we need to do it.
And Nancy was fun, you know, because once a week they'd come into my office and here they come.
Yeah.
They're not going to be denied. What am I giving? I mean, we're even having a conversation. But you can just see their thought process and the exuberance and the excitement building on how they're all putting this together. And I'm thinking to myself, they're asking me for permission. Okay, that's sort of weird. You know, just go my...
Go do your work.
Yeah, and the chief of staff will always tell you, with me, be careful what you ask for, because I'll just look at you and say, do it.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I was, just do it.
Awesome.
You do it.
Well, and the thing is across the spectrum with Brenda, Bryn, and I, mm-hmm. it's all the same clients.
Yeah. yeah.
It's all the same clients. And yeah. so it made absolutely perfect sense for us to partner and do this. And I can see many partnerships in the future.
Oh, so can I. That's what we call a conspiracy.
You know, I think I just would throw in, like, I know that they're talking about their clients, but honestly, when you start, you don't have to dig very far mm-hmm. to see. When we started the Opioid Project, one of the first things we wanted to do was to go into the State House in Boston and put up what we called a 360 of the opioid epidemic. And we wanted to show what are the first responders going through, what are the family members going through, what are the treatment advocates going through, what are the people who may have had loss go through. When you start adding that emotional and psychological, physical, monetary cost, you end up sort of looking at their kind of ideas of who their clients are. It is your entire community. And that's really the point of the Opioid Project, which is mm-hmm. it is the entire community is at risk of such great loss that we have to throw everything we can at it.
Yeah, loss and cost. And the good thing about our governor is that he's really behind this project. And I could see him doing a 360 in Juneau. I could see him doing that. Mm-hmm. You know what? I could see it happening. Oh, look at her.
We would be happy. We're on record now that Annie and I would be happy to go to Juneau. And,
May through September.
We'll see you in 4 months, right?
No, 2024.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
Because, you know, October through April can get
mighty cold, dark. Cold.
How much rain do you like a year?
Not that much.
Like 125 inches?
No, thank you.
Exactly. So, you put on the pre-symposium. Wedgwood Manor, what time does it start for the participants?
9 o'clock.
Okay.
For the first set, and then 1:30 for the second set.
So, 9 to noon?
9 to noon. 1:30 to 4:30. Yep.
Okay.
And we're going to have a breakfast and snack in the morning and afternoon, mm-hmm. and then we'll have a lunch that we'll provide them.
And then hopefully they'll be able to, on the actual days of the symposium, put the art, at least the art will be ready to be up, could be up around the mm-hmm. the actual symposium. The audio won't be ready until we're done editing it, but they'll have half the package ready.
So are you in the great room at the Wedgwood?
Yeah, you really are. No nails can go in the wall. I already asked.
You just lead them on chairs, sister. I can tell you.
Okay,
that's all
cool.
You do. You get up those chairs.
You know, we are almost at capacity.
Every time I turn to her, it's almost 200 people.
I'll handle this.
Okay.
Yeah.
You mean you can do better?
Well, if we had a bigger room.
You said almost at capacity.
Yeah, between presenters and people that are signed up to register, we are at 189, 190 people right now. And
you're the closer.
Yeah. Mm.
You know how to do this.
I am.
You can do this a little bit better.
215 people.
The final push.
Yeah. And then Peter Kaptan's going to feed everybody Thursday night after the awards ceremony at J.P. Jones.
Yeah, that's going to be fun.
I talked to him today. And then Mark Brown.
What's he serving?
Indian tacos.
That's right.
Yay, Victor.
That's right.
And
those are so good.
They are. He's the best.
Yeah.
And then Mark Brown is closing it out with a concert, and the Mark Brown and the Blues Band. And I'm so grateful for Mark. Anytime I've ever asked him mm-hmm. to show up,
he gives it up.
He shows up. He showed up for me at FCC and came in and did two concerts there for the guys and gals, and he's showing up for us now.
Okay, Nancy. You're here on a Wednesday afternoon. Your production is Monday morning. So what are you going to be doing between now and Monday morning?
Oh, let's see. I will be going to check out the hot springs and going to do a day trip out to Denali. And then Annie and I actually I have to get the artwork ready, the art stuff ready for going, and we're going to powwow with Marsh over dinner or something here and there. So, but mostly I'm going to get a little time to enjoy the beautiful outdoors here.
There's a nice little walk out of Kramer's Field.
I did that today.
Okay, good. My favorite place in
I
interior.
Loved it. I'm going to go. I think I'm going to do it every morning.
Did
while
you see
I'm
any
there.
Birds? Were there birds?
I saw birds, but you know, you couldn't go on. I didn't have the really tall boots to go on some of it. You weren't supposed to walk in the field, but I only had my hiking boots.
How tall are you?
5 feet.
Are you 5 feet?
Yeah.
So some of our grass out there is you would get lost in.
Oh, yeah. No, it's all flat in there now.
Is it? Okay.
It's sort of boggy. And
it's boggy.
Yeah, it's boggy, and you can go in the bog.
I did watch some kids fall into the bog.
And it'll suck your boots right off.
Good times. I can't wait for that.
You don't want your boots sucked
I am
off.
Excited about the hot springs, though, and I am excited about Denali. So it's and I keep asking them, I'm going to go up and go meet Sarah.
Dr. Stanley. She's going to meet Dr. Stanley out at Ursa Major.
Oh, good.
Later this afternoon, because she's the one who started it all. She's the professor from UAF that started this whole thing rolling.
Ursa Major is a piece of art. The way they've created that environment, the serving station and everything.
Really?
It's quite beautiful.
I've never been there.
Yeah, she said that there's art up, so I'm kind of excited to go out there.
It's just the way it's all set up, and then the art that's in there, you're going to enjoy yourself.
Awesome.
You're really going to enjoy yourself. And so good for you. So, Denali.
Well, it's barely open, actually. It opens up on the 20th, on May 20th, but you can drive into up to 15 miles, and then we'll get out and hike a little. And we're practicing saying bear, 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 bear while we walk. So we.
This is what you do. You got a 22?
No, she doesn't.
I don't.
Carry a 22.
Yeah, gotcha.
You see a bear.
Yeah, no.
Shoot your partner in the knee and run.
You're so funny. I am looking. If there's anyone out there, I do need to borrow some bear spray. If you have any, can lend me.
Drop it off at City Hall to Jessica.
That'll just piss them off.
Well, and they're coming out right now. This is their time to come out.
Yeah. Yeah.
Are you guys trying to make me feel more comfortable?
I just want you to be aware.
Well, then get me the bear spray.
You know what the most important thing you bring is?
What?
Bug dope.
Oh, okay, fair
bug
enough.
Bug dope. Yeah. We're giving her all the secrets, you know.
Yeah.
It's that time of year where I put bug dope in my car, my business satchel, my briefcase, you know.
All right.
The mosquito is our state bird.
You are so funny.
They're big.
Well, Mayor, I'm going to come and go in to look at your stash so I can.
Yeah, and what you're going to find is we have incredible, beautiful resources here in the interior. You know, the Chena River, Kramer's Field, Denali National Park, Chena Hot Springs, the Tanana, the Chena Lakes Project. But the finest natural resources you're going to find are the people and the personalities. And out at Ursa Major, you'll find some of those. It's at other locations here, too.
Is the dog open yet?
No.
The Howling Dog has some carpet from when the Pope was here.
Yeah.
Well.
Well, it's been awesome to be with Marcia, and her husband have been wonderful. And so I've already fallen in love with the people here. So,
Marcia, thank you so much for bringing in Miss Marks here, Nancy Marks. Nancy, thank you for coming here to Fairbanks, Alaska. I know you're going to be successful, and thank you for helping Fairbanks. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, sir.
You have a great day, and I will see you later.
Bye.